Welcome to Futures in Languages, a podcast showcasing stories from UCF's Modern Languages and Literatures Department alumni. I'm Christina Torres, and I'll be hosting this episode. Today, we'll be talking with Mateo Berner, who graduated from the Spanish MA in the fall of 2015, and also did his Spanish BA in the same department before that. Thanks so much for joining us today, Mateo.
Thank you, Christina, for having me, and thank you to the Modern Languages and UCF community as well.
Now, all I heard were amazing things from the faculty in the department, so we're really excited to have you joining us today and taking some time out. I know that you're busy with your PhD candidacy, so we really appreciate you taking that time to come in and chat with us. Let's go ahead and just get started. So first question here is, can you tell us a little bit about yourself, maybe where you're from?
Sure. I was born and raised mostly in Northern Illinois. I won't get into details of where because not many people know the geography. So I'll say Chicago, and moved to Orlando, Florida with my parents and my brother, and my sister was in my mom's stomach at the time. So
okay.
Moved down to Florida when I was about 11 years old. And I was basically there until I left after graduating from the master's program.
Awesome. What have you been up to since graduation?
Well, since graduation, I did a quick stint as a visiting instructor in the Modern Languages Department teaching Spanish for a semester in spring of 2016. And then that following summer, I moved to Madison, Wisconsin, where ever since I've been preparing myself for, you know, my doctoral degree being finished anytime in the next year or so. And I've been just taking in the Midwestern, you know, weather, the Midwestern vibe. The stuff that I hadn't had since I was a kid, basically. So I've basically just been here and keeping busy teaching as a TA and researching for my dissertation.
That's all really exciting. What kinds of classes have you been teaching since your MA?
Mostly what I've been teaching as of late is here at Madison, what would be our equivalent at UCF of 1121 Spanish.
Mm-hmm.
So we call it here second semester Spanish. And I like it because they've already passed through the first semester, they have some knowledge, and that allows me a little bit more leeway to throw a little bit more at them and challenge them a little bit more.
Mm-hmm.
And aside from that, I did two semesters. I taught a composition course for a little bit more of the more advanced students that they get into the courses there after taking the language, you know, which would have been four semesters of Spanish at that point, and then they can get into the composition side.
Gotcha. So would it be safe to say that you've worked with, you know, beginners all the way to the advanced level at this point?
Yeah, I think that'd be a safe assessment to make. Basically from the zero, I know nothing.
Like the hola, mi nombre es level.
Yeah, that type of stuff.
Okay.
But I do get still a lot of students that took Spanish in high school. And then that's either they came into my class and, okay, we're good. They're remembering stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But sometimes I have to refresh them, which is fine because, you know, sometimes they go a couple semesters before they get to their language requirements.
Gotcha. So that all sounds really cool. What is your research interest then, since you mentioned that you're in your PhD and you're doing some research?
So I have dabbled in a couple different things in phonology with Colombian Spanish. I've also done some stuff with Chilean Spanish recently with one of my professors and his colleague, as well as something focused more on kind of a typological approach to Algonquian languages, which is a family of native languages spoken in the United States and Canada as well. That stretches a good depth. But my main focus on the dissertation is working with the Asturian language, which is spoken in northern Spain. And particularly, I research a phenomenon that's referred to as mass neuter. And if you want, we can get into a little bit of that.
Yeah, if you could just give us like a very basic level explanation of what is mass neuter, what is neuter for anyone who's not familiar with grammatical gender.
Okay, so depending on who you read in the literature, that name could be somewhat of a misnomer because there's very few nouns that alternate between their final vowel ending in an O versus a U in this language, and it changes the interpretation of said word. So just to give an example, pelu ending in U is the typical masculine ending in this language, and it denotes a single hair or a strand of hair, whereas pelo is the hair on your head. It's the group of all of the hairs together.
Mm-hmm.
And we see this with very few nouns, and we see it extended into other contexts like adjectives, where if you have a mass noun, which is typically a noun you can't count, think of like milk. In English, you typically say, I'm going to buy milk. You don't say, I'm going to buy milks, typically. So we see these nouns in the Assyrian language when you take an adjective and modify it. If it comes after the adjective, that adjective is ending in O instead of what should be ending in, for the feminine noun, leche, yeche, should be ending in an A, right? Mm. So you would say, I don't know. Let me think of an example. Let's just say, for the sake of argument, la leche buena or la leche blanca, you would say in Spanish, as opposed to maybe chocolate milk. Mm-hmm. But you would actually say in Asturian, ya leche blanco. So what we see here is a kind of a clash in how the adjective ends compared to the noun, because typically in Romance languages, we see agreement there of gender. So there's something crazy happening there with that adjective, because you'd have to say la blanca yeche if you put the adjective before it. Does agree in gender. These words interact with each other and how they appear basically in the language. And we'll see what the participants that did my survey gave me as I go through the data.
That sounds really cool. Out of curiosity, did you seek out this particular language because of the neuter aspect that you're researching?
So story time.
Yes, please. Story time is great.
I have to drop a name. Dr. Fernandez Rubiera. Mm-hmm. He goes by Paco. Yeah. I remember when he came in my undergrad, I used to say, doctor. No, Paco. hey, that's cool, call me Paco.
Yeah.
But anyways, this all happened because of him, and because I remember getting into his linguistics courses, and I started like to take an interest in, oh, this is a puzzle to me, let me see if I can crack this code and think about the language in this way. So he's from Asturias, he speaks Asturian. And I at one point knew he was missing, you know, that aspect, because he's in Florida, obviously working. So I started learning different little phrases that like kind of bring him a little bit of his own culture, because there aren't many Asturian speakers in the States.
So. Gotcha.
And then that turned into learning a little bit more, sending him emails in the language. I was learning from the grammar, actually. And when I got to the point where I was doing my master's, he essentially kind of offered to work with me on a master's thesis. And the topic that I kind of just gave a little glimpse on for the viewers was something that he's had set aside for when he got tenure down the line, something to go back to, because it's been talked about for 60 years, but everyone has a different opinion as far as the research goes on how to explain this. So he basically put me onto the topic. We sat down, talked about it with a coffee at the what used to be the Barnes & Noble Starbucks area. It's
what now, is now Foxtail or something? Foxtail, yeah. They changed that.
So we talked, put together a list of references, and pretty much the rest is history. I've continued that thesis topic into my PhD program with my now advisor to try to get a little bit further with it too.
That all sounds really great and dovetails really nicely into my next question, which is... how did the Spanish program prepare you for your life now? It seems like you had a really great bridge from that interest when you sat down with Paco, and that carried you into the next phase. Would you like to share a little bit more on that?
Yeah, so I think that there's a couple of things to unpack there, but I think the obvious is the academic / career side, right? I started at Valencia Community College. That, I'm showing a little bit of my age because now that's Valencia College from what I've heard. Yeah. But I was doing music production.
Awesome. And
long story short, found my way back into Spanish. Ended up doing my, you know, bachelor's because I like, oh, I like this. Sat in Dr. Lopez's office and he interviewed me. We talked, went through all the professors in my department, basically. Dr. Garcia, Dr. Nalbon hit the literature with me. And Dr. Villanueva, who's retired, and then obviously we get to linguistic side, you know, Paco, Alvaro was there at the time.
Yeah.
And they all really prepared me to go into the master's research wise. They all basically pushed me to go to conferences. I did that, loved it. I think it was Dr. Lopez that when I came back said, I loved it. And he said, okay, you can't change your mind now. You told me that you like this, so we're going to push you to go for it. So I went for it. Obviously, they pushed me. They prepared me for the doctorate. Obviously, I don't think I'd be able to be at this level and dedicate my time to a PhD without all of their formation, basically, mm-hmm. in my area. And I'm forgetting some names, so I apologize. But I basically went through all of the Spanish classes and all the professors there. But they all prepared me to get to this point to potentially, you know, get on a tenure track position, research in my field, and hopefully give back in the same way to my future students. That's kind of the academic career side. I think mm-hmm. just life in general, I could boil it down to, I lived in Orlando, a huge Spanish speaking population is there. While I was in college, I got jobs because I spoke Spanish. Mm-hmm. I worked at a music store called The Band Room for about 5 years, you know. I was using my Spanish at Disney when I worked there to interpret for guests that didn't speak English. I was working with the servers to help them. So I think culturally in my life, they definitely offered me something because the only person in my family speaks Spanish is my dad's stepdad. His family is from Mexico originally. So, mm-hmm. and now I can talk to him in Spanish. But aside from that, I have a Colombian girlfriend. I go to Colombia. I visit her and her family. I can go to a foreign country and survive, yeah. you know, use my Spanish, get around. Yeah. And it's ironic because I had a student ask me, and you can let me know if I'm talking too much.
Oh, no, but, you're good. You're good.
I told them, you know, it's funny. I came back. I was in Wisconsin. I had gone to Colombia. I came back and I said, you know, it's funny. I've done all this schooling in Spanish. I got a master's. I got a bachelor's. I'm partway through my PhD. And all of this time, 10 plus years with the language. And when I went to Colombia, was the first time that I was like, oh, I do know Spanish. Because it's like, I'm in a position where I'm arguing with the taxi driver in Spanish because the taxometer says that I'm supposed to pay 3,200 pesos. And he's telling me 6,000 pesos. Yeah. And so I'm arguing with this guy in Spanish. It's like, wow, can I imagine if I didn't speak the language, like what I'd be doing, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Turns out there's a minimum fare that no one told me about.
Okay.
So he was right. So sorry to that guy. But
You got the chance to talk it out. Yeah. I think you're touching on a lot of the opportunities that come with knowing additional languages. And it really is, I think, for all of us who teach languages, love languages, we approach it from the angle of it opens doors, it opens opportunities, and how nice it is to be able to open doors and how nice it is to be able to land in a country where you don't live and be able to communicate. And there's a huge difference between being able to do that and not. And I've been in countries where I speak the language, and I've definitely been in countries where I don't. And I absolutely know the difference between those two experiences. So it seems like you had that really great academic preparation. And I think I think most of us, you know, if we get to the PhD level, it's because we've had some really great mentorship along the way. I could also name drop a couple really amazing teachers. I mean, starting in undergrad, who really just saw interest and said, yeah, you're going to be doing this. And I said, what? And then they said, yeah, you're going to be doing this. And here we are. So it's always great to hear how inspiring teachers are. And I love what you said about paying it forward, because I think that's what all of us at a certain point do, is like, thank you so much. Now I want to pay it forward to my students too.
Super important.
Yeah.
That was one of the things Paco made me promise him when I was going to start the PhD. Don't ever forget where you came from.
That's so important. Yeah.
I know I came out of this program at UCF and I was excited to do this partially because this is cool. But also because, like, yeah, I'm going to represent my alma mater because I came from that group, and I need to give a nod to that as well.
Yeah, thanks so much. And shout out to all of our alumni out there. We do like to keep in contact with you all. These are the stories that keep us excited about what we're doing. So thanks for that. I do have one more question here for you, Mateo. And the last one is, what advice would you offer someone who is interested in studying Spanish?
I think the best piece of advice I could give, and I say this from, and I'm no veteran teacher, but I've taught for quite a few semesters at this point. I think the best thing I could say is stick with it. it's a foreign language. This doesn't come easily to everyone. Mm-hmm. Sometimes you do have to work at it. So don't get discouraged. And I do think you need to go to your professors if you're struggling, if you need help, if you don't understand the grammar topic, and try to get that resolved. And if you feel like you want to kind of challenge yourself, or if you just feel like you want to just get it to stick in your brain, you know, my experience has always been try to make it as relevant to yourself as possible. Because if you're learning a bunch of verbs and they're not sticking in your head, and you're trying to, you know, do well on your Spanish test or learn the language, mm-hmm. I can guarantee you that a lot of those verbs maybe, I don't know, work perfectly in a situation of video games, and you love to play video games. Mm-hmm. So make it relevant to your interests, and you'll practice the same verbs that you need to learn for the goals of your class. But if you make it more meaningful to things that you do that are relevant to your everyday life, I think it does take away the work of it a little bit. And mm-hmm. it also should help kind of stick things in your head a little bit better. So that way you can recall those the moments you need to.
For sure. I think you're touching on this idea of, yeah, language study should remain relevant. That's the goal, is to make it relevant, make it useful. So yeah, I completely see that. The theme of sticking with it, even though it can be challenging sometimes, is one that I've heard, you know, alumni have repeated that theme. So that's one that we're all in agreement on. We know that it's not an easy task. Languages by their nature are complex, but if we stick with it, if we keep going. And I love what you said about finding support. And especially in your story, you got so much support from the department. Would you say that all you got to do is show interest and ask?
I think if you show interest, that definitely helps. Mm-hmm. I do think there's moments where you have to say, like, hey, I really want to do this.
Yeah.
Do you have any advice? Mm-hmm. You know, email your professors. I've emailed people in the field. Hey, I need help with this. Do you have any intuitions? But yeah, if you don't ask, then you'll never know.
Yep.
And I guess the worst they can tell you is no.
Yeah, that's true.
But yeah, I would definitely say just if you know you want to do something, go for it. And even if that particular professor can't help you, I'm sure they know somebody that can.
That's great. I always tell my students, asking is free. So go ahead and ask. Yep. Great.
Oh, I charge for that. A dollar per question.
Well, there you go. There you go. Thank you for listening to this episode of Futures in Languages. I'd like to give a shout out to Video Guy for our intro and outro music downloaded from freesound.org. I'm Christina Torres, and our featured guest today was Mateo Berner. Tune in next time to hear more alumni stories from modern languages. For more information about the Spanish BA and the Spanish MA, as well as other language programs in the Modern Languages Department, please visit our website at mll.cah.ucf.edu.